Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely true. So Afghanistan, oh boy, we're going to talk about that. In fact, I think I'm going to lead with that. But we also have Syria, we have North Korea, we got, it's a lot of foreign policy stuff today. Domestically, we'll have single payer, and we're going to continue to apply the pressure. And Bernie Sanders has made a little bit of a prediction here publicly, and that should make you happy. Bernie Sanders' prediction should bring a smile to your face, and I tend to agree with his prediction. So we have a lot to get to. Let's go ahead and open it up right now, and I'm going to start with insane new developments with Trump's foreign policy. It gets worse and worse every single day. Here we go. Yesterday, the military dropped the largest non-nuclear bomb that we have in Afghanistan. Largest non-nuclear bomb. So its nickname is the mother of all bombs. Sounds pretty colossal, if you ask me. It weighs about 21,000 pounds. It's so big that it has to be dropped out of the back of a cargo plane. You know, they can't just use a standard fighter jet because not good enough, not big enough. You got to drop it out of the back of a cargo plane. The blast radius for this bomb is a mile in every direction. This was just dropped yesterday. Just like, you know, little casual, nonchalant Thursday. What are you doing? Ah, I don't know. I'm going to grab a sandwich, maybe a soda, drop a near-nuclear bomb. The Pentagon says that they were trying to take out ISIS tunnels. I like how the establishment press loyally reported it as such. They were just stenographers to power. Virtually every single headline and every single outlet was like, in Afghanistan, ISIS targeted by U.S. bomb. Now, understand, the way the press is supposed to work is fact-checking, holding the people in power accountable. So if the Pentagon says, or some general says, yeah, we were taking out ISIS with this move, you're supposed to go, oh, really? So do you have further evidence of that? Do you have information, data? Can you present something to me that is, you know, in fact, believable? That makes me go, oh, they're not just saying that. Because here's the deal, they're always going to tell you, oh, we only got the bad guys. That's what we always do. It's always the bad guys. In every story so far where Trump has massacred civilians, later on we learn, oh yeah, it wasn't ISIS. Excuse me. They say we got ISIS, but we always learn later on, no, it wasn't ISIS. It was civilians. In his first raid, he killed an 8-year-old American girl and 30 civilians. Recently in Mosul, 200 civilians. So they always say initially, yeah, we got a stronghold of ISIS or Al-Qaeda because we're great. It's what we are. It's what we do, man. We just get the bad guys. And then we learn that's not true. So what are they saying now? For the first whatever, 6-7 hours or so after the bomb dropped, they said, oh, we don't have any casualty reports. We don't have that yet. And then they said, we have 36 ISIS guys. Again, same script. The initial report, you say, we got all bad guys. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, when nobody's looking, you get it starts in more fringe outlets, and then it leaks out more to the mainstream. But it's, yeah, we say we got bad guys, we actually got civilians. So I don't trust them in any way. And I'll reserve judgment until I see more accurate numbers. I don't just believe the Pentagon and their talking points and our lapdog press, which acts as a stenographer for them. So they say they were trying to take out ISIS tunnels. Now, to the extent that that's true, guess who built those tunnels? That's right, the CIA in the 1980s to help the Mujahideen when the Mujahideen were fighting the big bad Soviet Union. We despise the godless communists so much that we armed and backed what eventually became Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. You had Osama bin Laden, who was described as a freedom fighter in Western media outlets. You have the Taliban meeting in the White House with Ronald Reagan. So, again, this is hilarious because it's the same thing like with Saddam Hussein. You know, he's got some pretty bad weapons, so we got to go in there and attack him. Who gave him those weapons? It's just weird. You left that part out. You were the ones who armed him, and now you're like, oh, I can't believe this guy has weapons. Same thing here. I'll build the tunnels, and let's help the Mujahideen. And, oh, God, wait, years later, we got to take out the tunnels. The Mujahideen. I mean, what are we going to do? They're crazy jihadists over here. About 95,000 human beings live near where the bomb was dropped. Now, they weren't, at least as far as we know, directly where the bomb was dropped. They're outside of the exact blast radius, but you feel the effects for miles and miles and miles in every direction when a bomb like this is dropped, needless to say. And we don't have reports yet on how many of those 95,000 people were affected in the sense that, hey, their windows were blown out. You go deaf if you're within a certain, distance from the epicenter of the bomb. So we don't have any information on that yet, but I assume in time some more will come out. And I'm sure more will come out about the so-called 36 ISIS people that we got. And so here's a fact that I find incredible. How many ISIS fighters are even in Afghanistan? Because, you know, you could be forgiven if you thought, what do you even mean, ISIS in Afghanistan? I mean, we have, sure, there's ISIS in Syria, and there's ISIS in Iraq, but ISIS in Afghanistan, I'm not even sure I ever heard of that. Yeah, most people didn't. You want to know why? Because there's only 600 to 800 ISIS fighters in Afghanistan. Yeah, but where'd you get those numbers, Kyle? Code pink? That's from the U.S. military. That's what they said. 600 to 800, and you dropped a near-nuclear weapon to destroy some tunnels that they maybe had. And by the way, what's going on there specifically in Afghanistan? What is ISIS doing in there, and who are they fighting, and where are the attacks centered? There's currently a war going on between ISIS and the Taliban. Yeah, you know what I call that? A problem that takes care of itself. Who doesn't want to see ISIS and the Taliban go at it? And who doesn't want to see them die in the process? Does that make me a dick? I don't think it makes me a dick, right? Because they are genuinely horrific people. So, but that's a perfect example of a place and time for us to go, would you look at that? It's time to get the fuck out of clock. I got shit I got to do. But no, we decide, hey, we're going to go in there and we're going to bomb and we're going to drop a near-nuclear weapon to take out 600 to 800 people. What the fuck is this? Why not let them fight each other, and why wouldn't we mind our business? Look, I think there's something more to this story, which is I think they're trying to flex a little bit, and the U.S. is trying to send a message to various countries, but one of them, North Korea, we'll get to that story in a little bit, where we're trying to say, hey, we're not fucking around, son. You better listen to what we say. And of course, it's a stupid idea. Of course, this is the neocons having completely taken over Trump's bitch-ass White House. Mr. half the time on the campaign trail saying, we're not going to do nation building, no more stupid wars, we're not going to waste money overseas, we're going to rebuild here at home, we're going to do infrastructure, that's what we're going to do. Tremendous. All that's gone. Gone. It just took one or two meetings with a bunch of idiot neocons who can sound mildly persuasive for him to go, oh, yes, I agree 100%. Do whatever you want. I told you, he cut out the middleman for the military-industrial complex. You know, there used to be people who have, you know, careers in government in governmental positions, and they would take their marching orders from defense contractors, but there was at least a little bit of a, hey, it's got to go from point A to point B. What did Trump do? Fire the people in government and just bring in the defense contractors and hire them to be in your administration. That's what Trump did. So that's, you know, neocon on steroids. Dick Cheney somewhere beaten off to this. Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Bill Kristol. These guys, oh my God, John Bolton. I can't believe we're getting exactly what we want on every single front now. That's what it is. From attacking the Syrian government to escalating in Afghanistan to escalating in Iraq, 432% increase in drone strikes. Now they're escalating further with North Korea. They're really trying to do everything that they laid out in the Project for a New American Century. Wait for it, man. Iran, they're going to ramp up fears about Iran, and they're going to escalate, and they're going to come up with some bullshit about how, oh, we got to do regime change there. Oh, my God, look at what we found out. There's new information, just like what they did with Assad with the chemical weapons. Oh, big bad Assad did a chemical weapons attack. We have to go in. We don't have a choice. Ooh. Watch, that's all going to happen for Iran, too. Give it time. Give it time. So how much did this whole process cost, too? I love how whenever the conversation is education or healthcare or anything for you, the people, they go, oh, my God, it's too expensive. What are we going to do? It's a deficit debt. It's terrible. We can't spend money we don't have. What, are you crazy? We got to be smart about what we do with our funds. Not a single word in the mainstream media. Not a single word. Oh, hey, can we afford this? Well, so what was it? It was $16 million for the bomb. $314 million for production of the bomb. So we have nearly $500 million to spend to drop a near nuclear weapon in the middle of nowhere, Afghanistan, to maybe take out ISIS tunnels that we created, the CIA created for the Mujahideen. Meanwhile, ask the people in Flint, Michigan how they're doing. How's their water? How's that? How are they feeling? Any neurological problems some people have there? Perpetual illness? Chronic illness? Is that a thing? Of course that's a thing. And it's not just Flint, by the way. There are many cities across America and towns that have polluted water as a result of fracking and other things. So I think maybe we should take care of that before we drop near nuclear weapons. How gratuitous is this? Yeah, we need one of the biggest bombs we have, the single biggest bomb we have in terms of conventional weapons. We need that. No, you don't. You don't need that. It's a waste of money, a waste of resources. You're not accomplishing anything with it. Again, they say 36 ISIS people knocked out. I'll believe it when an independent source verifies it, and it's not just a talking point from the Pentagon. But again, you have 600 to 800 ISIS fighters in Afghanistan, and they're fighting the Taliban. Let them fight. What are we doing? The world is Trump's playground and the neocons' playground, and they just like pushing buttons and seeing shit blow up. And the disgusting reaction from people to this, man. There's so many people just callous indifference or weird conspiracy theories that, again, link back to Russia. He's just trying to deflect from the fact that he's Putin's puppet. It's like they're trying to come up with, the corporate Democrats want to argue against Trump, but they don't, like, the thing right in front of them that's like, hey, this is bad. They're like, no, let's, Russia, move that aside. Like, what do you mean? Like, oh, he's trying to distract from how shitty his presidency is. But what makes his presidency shitty so far? The fact that he's doing stuff like that, that's the shitty thing. Hey, I just dropped a near nuclear bomb for no goddamn reason in the middle of Afghanistan. What the fuck? That's what you talk about. Like, no, Russia. So people are just callously indifferent or nonchalant about it, and then you got other people who are conspiracy-minded about it. And then you have Fox News. Fox News, I kid you not, I saw the clip right before I came on air here. On Fox and Friends, you had Geraldo Rivera and Brian Kilmeade and the rest of the bobbleheads saying, well, isn't this great? This is what freedom looks like. And Geraldo says, yeah, one of the things I love, following politics is watching bombs get dropped off bad guys. How childish are these people? How unserious are they in terms of research, in terms of critical thinking? Under Obama, we had 90% of the time, drones did not hit the intended target. 90% of the time! That is mental! Now, under Trump, he loosened the rules of engagement. We just covered it. He did it specifically in Somalia and North Africa. He said, you know what? We think we worry too much about civilian casualties. So, again, 432% increase in drone strikes have the civilian death rate shooting up even more under Donald Trump. We keep seeing the stories, 200 civilians dead in Mosul, 30 dead in, what was it, Yemen or Pakistan in a raid, killed an 8-year-old girl. I mean, and all they have to say is this is what freedom looks like when you drop a near-nuclear weapon for no reason when ISIS and the Taliban are fighting each other. That's what I call a win-win. What happened in non-intervention? What happened in spending our money here at home? Guys, this is sick, man. This is sick. And just wait till I get to the next story about North Korea, because as sick as this is, oh, there are even potential worse conflicts that might happen down the road as a result of decisions, terrible decisions that are being made by neocons right this second. Okay. Next, we had another foreign policy blunder yesterday that led to the deaths of innocent people. Reuters explains, a U.S.-led airstrike mistakenly killed 18 members of a Kurdish and Arab militia backed by Washington south of the Syrian city of Taqaba, the Pentagon said on Thursday. The U.S.-led coalition forces struck the position on Tuesday after another partner in the fight wrongly told them it was occupied by Islamic State militants, the Pentagon said, underlining the complex nature of the conflict. Quote, the target location was actually a forward Syrian Democratic Forces fighting position, the statement added. The SDF is fighting in a campaign to encircle and ultimately capture Raqqa City, Islamic State's main base of operations in Syria. So it's nice to know that this is how life and death decisions are being made. Yeah, I don't know. I heard it from some other douchebags who we teamed with, who I don't know anything about, that these other people on the ground are the bad guys. So press the button, press the button, press the button. That's how they make these decisions. And it's been this bad for a while. Like, people tend to believe, it's so naive to think, oh yeah, you know, U.S. military, we're so high-tech that we make 100% sure before we do anything and we're getting the right people. That's how it works. You know, we could have a laser-guided missile hit a spot that's the size of a dime and only take out the right people. I mean, just look at what we know about drone strikes, for example. We know that there's a bunch of different kinds of drone strikes. There's personality strikes, where that's the one where they say, oh, we know who we're taking out, and we're going to go after them. Then there's signature strikes, where they go, not so sure we know who we're killing, but go ahead and do it. Then there's double taps. You attack, and then you go back around, and then you take out the first responders. That's a terrorist tactic. And again, so to them, like, what constitutes evidence of we got him? Like, we know we're getting the right person. They just say, oh, I don't know. We're tracking the cell phone, and the cell phone's in this area, and that's good enough. Do you know if there's maybe women and children around the person? And are you, still personality strike. We know well enough. And those are the best examples. Again, some of the other strikes are, we think, I don't know, go ahead. And now in Syria, we're going, I don't know, some jackasses who we don't know well told us that those are the bad guys. Press the button. Do, 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 do. This is how life and death decisions are made. Again, it reminds me of the expose. I couldn't believe this wasn't a bigger story, but there was a story about how former drone operators came out and they're like, look, man, I got to keep it real. I have PTSD. I've done horrible things, and I'll never be able to forgive myself. Because they say the culture of the drone strikes was a bunch of people, oftentimes drunk, sometimes drunk and high on coke, who they treated it like a video game. And even when they saw little kids, they'd say, yeah, press the button anyway. It's a fun-sized terrorist. I'm not kidding. That's a direct quote. Somebody would say, it's a fun-sized terrorist. Worth it anyway. Just kill him, and then you won't have to deal with the problem later on. Just a culture of callous indifference and not caring about massacring civilians, which is why even under Obama, you had a 90% civilian death rate with the drones, which is crazy. And now under Trump, he even loosened the rules of engagement. Now, in Syria, it's a particularly comical scenario because as we've discussed before, you have Pentagon-armed and backed militias fighting CIA-armed and backed militias, which means we're on both sides of the same goddamn war. You know, that seems like a waste of money and resources to me. That also seems deeply immoral and unethical to me. How can we just sit here and let that happen as our infrastructure gets a grade of D+, and people in Flint don't have clean water? And half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. I mean, you don't think we can take all this, over 50% of our discretionary budget goes to military spending. You don't think we could chop that in half and then start sending the resources here to give people health care and give people education? I mean, it's crazy. We're on both sides of the same war, which makes no sense, and everybody's... That's cool. I mean, what's the problem? What's the problem? The establishment's like, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to work, right? That's what we do. We just get involved for no goddamn reason. I mean, they say, hey, Assad's a brutal dictator, vicious, terrible. We want him gone. The rebels, yeah, okay, most of them are jihadists. Okay, I've never seen a better invitation to stay the fuck out. We don't like either side. Oh, great, stay out. But no, we got to get involved. We just killed civilians. And then what effect does that have? Of course, breeds anti-American hatred. Because how could it not? Because when you kill somebody's aunt and kill somebody's uncle, and again, the Kurds, so that's who was killed here, the Kurds are, it's like the one group in the region that we're supposed to have zero beef with. Like, okay, you have some Shia militias. Well, we have a beef with them because we don't like Iran, for example, and Iran often backs the Shia militias. All right, the Sunni fighters, well, they're jihadists, many of them, fundamentalists, backed by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and we don't like them, they're extremists. But the one group, the Kurds, who are kind of have unquestionably been on our side in this fight against ISIS the entire time, bomb them, and whoops, did we make an enemy out of the Kurds now too? It's unbelievable how incompetent, how stupid, and how immoral and unethical this is, man. Get the fuck out. Just get out. We don't need your benevolent love bombs, America. I mean, you're not helping. You're not – the war on terror, the idea – we got to limit or eliminate the number of terrorists in the world after 9/11. Okay. Mission failed. Wrap up. I mean, if it was going to happen, it was going to happen by now, right? 16 years later? It would have happened by now. No, but now there's more terrorists than there were then. So that's just a failure. That is an objective, empirical failure. You can't say it was a good idea. If you did nothing, there'd probably be less terrorists. Seriously. And then again, they want to pretend like, oh, no, we're serious about doing this fight too. Well, then why are you still arming and propping up the Saudi regime when they're the chief ideological exporter of Salafism and Wahhabism, the ideology of ISIS? I mean, it makes no sense in so many ways, but this is just now business as usual. Yeah, we did a strike and we killed innocent people and whatever. And then at the same time, this story came out. The Pentagon released, the government said, we just dropped a near nuclear weapon in Afghanistan. What? Why? Tunnels? There were like tunnels. On tunnels, you're going to waste $314 million. That's what it costs. Yeah, $314 million on tunnels. Why not? As they say that, and as they say, but it's cool, we got all the right people, we learn, like, immediately after, oh, and we killed 18 of the wrong people in Syria. What? So maybe your intelligence is not that great. You know, maybe it wasn't a good idea to do that attack in Afghanistan, because I bet later on we learned there were civilians who were killed. You know, and I also bet it was useless because ISIS and the Taliban are fighting in Afghanistan. So why not let them fight? Nope. Get involved. Drop a near nuclear weapon. Every decision that's being made now by this administration is wrong. And the neocons are in the driver's seat. And it's easy to see with stories like this. Okay. Now, the next story has the potential to be an absolute game changer, which, if I don't say so myself, should scare the pants off of you. So we have Afghanistan, we have Syria, we have escalation there, needless to say. And then the neocons, prize of all prizes, that would be North Korea. Okay, let me set this up for you. Kim Jong asshole versus meerkat fuckface. Let's all laugh together as the world burns. The Trump administration is considering an offensive strike against North Korea. Yeah, so this is from NBC News. The U.S. is prepared to launch a preemptive strike with conventional weapons against North Korea should officials become convinced that North Korea is about to follow through with a nuclear weapons test, multiple senior U.S. intelligence officials told NBC News. North Korea has warned that a big event is near, and U.S. officials say signs point to a nuclear test that could come as early as this weekend. The intelligence officials told NBC News that the U.S. has positioned two destroyers capable of shooting Tomahawk cruise missiles in the region, one just 300 miles from the North Korean nuclear test site. American heavy bombers are also positioned in Guam to attack North Korea, should it be necessary, and earlier this week, the Pentagon announced that the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier strike group was being diverted to the area. The U.S. strike could include missiles and bombs, cyber and special operations on the ground. The danger of such an attack by the U.S. is that it could provoke the volatile and unpredictable North Korean regime to launch its own blistering attack on its southern neighbor. On Wednesday, North Korea said it would hit the U.S. first with a nuclear weapon should there be any signs of U.S. strikes. On Thursday, North Korea warned of a merciless retaliatory strike should the U.S. take any action. Now, this story actually gets even more frustrating and scary because, so after this story was released, you had officials in the Trump administration who were apoplectic, and they're like, how dare NBC News write this? This is dangerous to them to write this, and it's also just fundamentally not true. And everybody went, okay, so go ahead. You tell me what the real story is. So what are the plans here with North Korea? They're like, we are not planning a preemptive strike. We are not planning an offensive strike. What we're saying is there would be a retaliatory strike. And so reporters were like, okay, retaliatory to what? And they go, oh, a nuclear test. It's a test. There were plenty of, North Korea did plenty of tests under, nuclear tests under Obama. Now look, do I like it? Of course not. Is it good? Of course not. Is it something you should wage an attack, literal attack on them for doing? No! But that's the thing, is like, his administration is just filled to the brim with neocons now, and they run everything, to the point where they're serious when they say, it is retaliatory on our part to strike them if they do a test. That's what they say. They're like, no, they couldn't believe somebody would suggest that, you know, a preemptive offensive strike against North Korea is indeed preemptive and offensive if they dare do a nuclear test. No, but that is preemptive. That is offensive. A test is a test. A test doesn't mean, hey, we just launched against South Korea, or we just launched against Tokyo, or Alaska, or California. Sorry, fuckface, we're coming after you. No, it means they're fucking doing a test. They've done tests under Obama. But they say, now, this is how you know the neocons have taken over. They go, yeah, but if they do that test, we're going to attack them. And you can't call it preemptive or offensive. That is what we're going to call it, because that is what it fucking is, you idiot. This is dangerous, man. This is really dangerous. They're handling this the exact wrong way. And their rhetoric is all like, tisk, tisk, look at them escalating. You literally just took warships and moved them to North Korea, right near where North Korea is, in strike range. Who the fuck does... Oh, let's move the warships there, and then we will wag our finger at you for maybe doing a test. Again, I don't like the test. It's not a good thing. Is it something to start a war over? No, no, no. You're cornering a man, baby. The guy, he's a hereditary authoritarian leader. He was given a country by a dad who pretended that they're demigods. Why are you playing with fire? That motherfucker's crazy. Stay the fuck away from him. That's what I would do. Look, do I feel horrible for the people in this country? Of course I do. But don't we have enough evidence to prove that regime change doesn't fucking work? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Okay, we'll attack them. And then what? Even assuming the best case scenario, we toppled the North Korean regime and they didn't launch a counterstrike against Seoul, which, by the way, they would immediately. Let's be clear about that. Goodbye, Seoul, if that were to happen. But let's say that for whatever reason, weapons malfunctions, yada, yada, didn't happen. Then what? Hey, we toppled the fucking demigod. That's how they're viewed in North Korea. I guarantee you tomorrow a Jeffersonian democracy is going to flourish. Their internet has like 6 sites. What are you going to do? Teach a whole country? Oh, by the way, so this is how a parliamentary system works. Let's sit down and talk. You can't fucking – are you kidding me? Unless, what do you want to do? You want the U.S. to just go in there and run everything? We don't even have clean water in Flint, Michigan, but you want to occupy North Korea and fix their system of government, which is 17 different levels of fucked? I can't, man. The neocons now completely and utterly run the Trump administration. It's not even close. It's not even close. I mean, look. You have 2 different factions within the Trump administration. You have the faction that is the establishment Republicans and the globalists, if you will, like Jared Kushner, Gary Cohn, all the people from the military-industrial complex. So that's one faction of the Trump administration. The other faction is the ultra-nationalists. That's Steve Bannon. Now, with Steve Bannon, you don't want him to win on issues like immigration, where he's as hardline as it gets. He wants, you know, there was an old radio clip of him saying he basically even wants to kick out legal immigrants. You know, he doesn't like legal immigration. He doesn't like people from South Asia coming to Silicon Valley. He's as extreme as it gets on that issue. He's as extreme as it gets on in many social issues. Like, he would love nationwide stop and frisk. He wants to ban all Muslims. So you don't want him to win on that. What you do want Steve Bannon to win on, economics, because he's more protectionist than the others in the administration, and foreign policy. As bad as these guys are, they're also Pat Buchanan-esque. They're like paleo-conservatives, where they say, we don't want to do interventions. We don't agree. We're not neocons. But apparently, the neocons have Trump's ear, and there are reports. When Steve Bannon was kicked off the National Security Council, I went, uh-oh, Because that's the one area where he could have been a mitigating force, like on the issue of Syria, for example, where he would have said, just don't go in. But the others were like, yo, we got to go in because freedom and democracy and the military-industrial complex is awesome and stuff. So when he was kicked off there, I was like, uh-oh, and then what happened? Now there are reports that he's being pushed more and more to the side, and he might get fired now. So it'd be a weird thing, but yes, if Steve Bannon gets fired, that means that on economic issues and on foreign policy issues, the Trump administration will get even worse. And that's what's happening. You have Gary Cohn, the people from Goldman Sachs, Jared Kushner, the rest of the establishment. They're running Trump's administration when it comes to foreign policy and when it comes to economics, too, obviously. So maybe the only thing that Bannon still had influence on Trump over was TPP. The one decent thing he did. So this is horrific, man. And it's the crown prize of the neocon. What has Trump done so far foreign policy-wise since being in there? Increased drone strikes 432%. Put boots on the ground, more boots on the ground in Afghanistan and in Syria. Launched an offensive attack against the Syrian government. And now we know, the fucking near-nuclear bomb in Afghanistan that he just dropped yesterday. Insanity. When, meanwhile, he's attacking ISIS. There's maximum 800 ISIS fighters in eastern Afghanistan. You need a near-nuclear weapon for that? And they're fighting the Taliban. Let them fucking fight. Who cares? And now we know North Korea is next. They're thinking, let's do something about North Korea. That is such a bad idea. I can't even put into words how bad an idea it is. Because here's how it would actually go down. You would have an attack against North Korea. So they would say, oh, you did a missile test. Then they would do an attack. All their rhetoric says, we'll do an attack if you do a missile test. Unless at the last minute there's a Hail Mary from one reasonable person in the administration who goes, yeah, you don't do it. You can't attack. But all their rhetoric is, we'll attack if they do a test. If we attack, they attack Seoul. It's not even a question. They attack Seoul, South Korea. And by the way, they're claiming, North Korea is claiming, no, we won't attack Seoul. If the U.S. attacks, we'll attack the U.S. Now, look, the intelligence that we have on them says they don't have the capability, they don't have the long-range weapons to do so. But do you want to roll the fucking dice? Is that what you want to do? Here, I'm president. Here's how I handle North Korea. Warships, gone. Take them out. They're no more in North Korean waters. Amped up rhetoric and fucking aggressive tweets from Trump, done. Don't even discuss North Korea in that sense in any way. You call China to the table, you talk with China, you de-escalate the situation. You want to let them do their shitty fucking test? Let them do their shitty fucking test. Guys, it's a fucking hereditary dictatorship, one of the poorest countries in the world, one of the most isolated countries in the world. They're not going to launch an offensive attack. They're not going to do an offensive attack. They know they'd be obliterated immediately. But if you attack them first, then they're going to attack. So let the fucking man baby have his backwards-ass country, and if you have any effect on them, you have to do it through diplomatic channels. You have to be clever about it. You have to be smart about it. You can't do it. You can undermine his dictatorship through reasonable methods using, you know, your words and negotiating tactics and back channels. That's how you handle something like this. The idea that you're about to do a standoff with probably literally the craziest leader in the world, why would you do that? Well, the answer is the neocons now run the Trump administration. Okay, next. You know what it's time for, right? Single payer. Here we go, baby. Lauren Steiner is an activist and organizer in LA. And she's fighting for single-payer health care. So she's working with many activists in California to get this done. So one of them asked Representative Linda Sanchez from California if she supports John Conyers' Medicare for All bill, and she's asking this question here on Lauren Steiner's behalf. So let's see how she reacted.
Hi. Hoskins. I'm a respiratory practitioner. And I want to ask you what you are going to do for the people of the United States to get a single-payer health care. Every night when I would work the ER, people die every day from lack of health care. Or if they have health care, they can't afford the copay to see their doctors. So the ER becomes their only line to health care. Also, they can't afford their medications. We get a lot of emergencies and deaths from, we've had children die from not having inhalers at their schools. We've had children die in our ER because the parents couldn't afford the copay to take them to the doctor. What are you going to do to get us Medicare for all?
Did you come in late night any chance?
No.
I think the first question on the sheet was about being aware. So I tried to explain that that's something I advocated for on the Affordable Care Act.
Kind of mindset that Justice Democrats is fighting against. So what you have here is a Democrat saying, well, I mean, look, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, I mean, it is better than what we had before, right? I mean, we got to defend it against these Republicans, right? That's easy. So they come out with goofy Trump care. And what did we learn about that? Oh, I don't know. It got $880 billion from Medicaid, and it's a $600 billion tax cut to the very rich, and it leaves 53, 52 million people uninsured. So it is a sledgehammer to our already disastrous healthcare system in the U.S. Defending against that is a no-brainer. And guess what? Mission accomplished. Done. Over. It's dead. It's not coming back. It ain't going to be revived. But the hallmark of a corporate Democrat is take your incremental change and www.zipit.com. But hold on now, Representative Sanchez. Well, do you not understand that 45,000 people still die every year because they don't have access to basic care? Do you not understand that millions of people are still uninsured? Do you not understand that even though the cost of your premiums, the increase in your premiums, even though it's slowed down, people still have premiums that they can't afford? Do you not understand this? Do you not understand that medical bills is still one of the top causes of bankruptcy in the country? Canada doesn't have – medical bankruptcies are not a thing in Canada. They're not a thing in France or Germany or Norway or Denmark or Iceland or Sweden or Australia. So your argument is, I got you hard. Look, my arm is twisted. Look, see, the Republicans, they twist my arm. What am I going to do? Well, it's impossible. We're not going to get it through this Congress, you silly far-left dreamer purist. We're not going to get single-payer through this Congress, so why even try? Because it's your job. That's why. Why are you not fighting? Why don't you go out there? Did you know Donald Trump, the president, has on at least five different occasions, we've given you the quotes before, he said, yeah, I support single payer. I want to do a system just like Canada. He said, yeah, Scotland has a tremendous healthcare system. My buddy went in there, got it fixed, and it didn't cost him a penny. We could have that here. We could have that here. He's countless times, he's came out in favor of single payer. Why are you not taking his quotes, going to Congress, giving a speech where you say what he said and you say, I call on President Donald Trump to support a Medicare for All bill. We've proposed it. You want to do health care reform? You want to make America great again and have us catch up to the rest of the modern world? Sign on to our bill. Why are you and all the Democrats not getting on that page, just like Representative Ro Khanna did? Hey, here's a quote from Trump. He supports single payer. I call on Trump to work with Bernie Sanders to get single payer. Guess what? She would say, we're not going to win that fight. But if you have the fight, maybe you don't win in terms of policy right now. But you can win policy later on, and you will win on politics right now. Because then people go, well, look at that. You got Democrats who are actually fighting for the people. Maybe we should actually go out to the polls and vote for them. Like, what do you think? You just, it's hard. We can't have another. I'm sick of hearing this garbage. This is what we heard after Sandy Hook, where children were slaughtered. 93% of the American people said, this is crazy. We need universal background checks. A majority of Republicans even, and a majority of NRA members. What did the Democrats do? They proposed a bill, watered it down more, and then said to the Republicans, could we have like 2% change? Here's the Manchin-Toomey background check bill. It's riddled with loopholes. It's not even a universal background check bill. Mitch McConnell blocked it, laughed about it on Twitter, and then what did the Democrats do? They went home with their tail between their legs. We can never fight on anything. They won't let us win. Why are you not using that as an opportunity? Go on all the Sunday shows. Go give speeches. Scream through a megaphone at the top of a mountain. Look at these fascist, authoritarian Republicans who don't believe, who don't agree with 93% of the American people. How do you not know how to fight and win on an issue when 93% of people are with you? I would hammer that fact home so much that we would get a supermajority in the next election, and we would get whatever we want. But what do? Get a single payer. It's so hard to make the U.S. catch up to every other modern nation. We're just going to have to accept that 45,000 people die every year because they don't have access to basic care. What are we going to do? Obamacare is as good as we can do. Obamacare is Romney care. Obamacare was originally a similar plan was proposed by Richard Nixon. Congratulations, Representative Sanchez. You're as progressive as Richard Nixon. He came up with an individual mandate system. Bob Dole supported one. Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. Newt Gingrich and Chuck Grassley supported it in the 90s. The Heritage Foundation wrote policy papers about it, saying that this is our answer to the Democrats' idea, which is single payer. You're gonna be in favor of a bill that Newt Gingrich supports, and you want Democrats to get up off their ass to go vote for you? Shame on you. Shame on you. Support this bill. It's not even like we're asking you to write the bill and propose the legislation. John Conyers already proposed Medicare for All. You know what you have to do? Here, see this? Sign your fucking name in favor of it. Co-sponsor the bill. That's it. That's all we're asking. Hey, the Democrats, you can't agree on a policy of Medicare for All, single payer, when every other modern nation has it. Guys, when we started, so we're doing justicedemocrats.com/single payer. We're doing a petition to make the Democrats support this. When we started this, 72 Democrats were in favor of this bill. Over 100 weren't. Now we have, over 80 Democrats supporting this. And it's chipping away. They fall on a daily basis. We've had representatives call Justice Democrats and go, "You got us. Look, we got too many phone calls. What am I going to do?" I got a phone call every 5 seconds into my office saying, "You have to support the bill or we're going to vote you out." When they see the petition, when they see the grassroots pressure, they have to respond because guess what? When push comes to shove, she cares about her job. She likes her job. She wants to have her job again. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to call her. Be polite. Be kind. But make crystal clear, especially if you're in her district, okay? I think this is the 38th district in California. You say, Representative Sanchez, if you don't support John Conyers' bill, Medicare for All, H.R. 676, we're going to vote you out. We're going to vote you out. So I just want to let you know that. This is a layup issue. This is a duh issue. It's a duh. Every modern nation has single payer, one version or another. We have the supposedly liberal party going, it's too hard. Yeah, I support it, but I don't support it. So when it's a little bit hard, when it's impractical, then I'm not in favor of the right policy. What does that even mean? Because we're not going to get it, because it's impractical, I can't be in favor of the correct thing. Well, you know what else was impractical, Representative Sanchez? I don't know. Women's suffrage? The civil rights movement? You think in 1958 in Mississippi, you know, if people took your approach, it was, come on, we're never going to desegregate. We're segregated now. It's impossible to desegregate. What are you talking about? Pie in the sky, purist? No. Lay down in a chalk outline of yourself. Don't fight. No, people got up and they fought for the right policy because they said what's right is right. Martin Luther King Jr., the time is always right to do what's right. That's what he said. What do you say? The time is not always right to do what's right. Even if I agree with single payer like you say you do, reason, stuff, things, I can't be in favor of it now because, I don't know, Republicans exist. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? You're a joke, Representative Sanchez. You're a joke. You don't support single payer. You know how you could prove you support single payer? By supporting single payer, by saying I agree with single payer, Medicare for All. John Conyers' bill, of course I agree, but you're not. So we're going to make you. Guys, the number is 202-225-6676. Be polite. Be nice. But just make clear, especially if you're in her district, hey, we're not going to support you if you don't support this bill. This bill is a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer. All right, next. Jeffrey Lord is an insane far-right lunatic who somehow has become a regular on CNN, and he was discussing healthcare policy with Simone Sanders, and look at what he said.
I I think we've seen a president, Donald Trump, who, you know, says one thing, does another. We don't know what the president would do. All we can go off of is what he is saying. And currently what he's saying is, look, if you don't give me what I want, I'm withholding stuff from everybody, and that is going to actually hurt people. I don't think we can use this inflammatory rhetoric, Allison, when we're dealing with people's lives. People with really serious illnesses, from cancer on down the line. So I think we need to just step back, and the president should take a more humane tone and course of action when talking about this issue.
Jeffrey, what about that? That it
Allison?
Does scare people when they hear it. Even if it is just a negotiating tactic, it scares people.
Allison, I want to say something here that I know will probably drive some of them crazy, but think of President Trump as the Martin Luther King of healthcare.
When I was a kid, President
Kennedy did not want to introduce the Civil Rights Bill because he said it wasn't popular, he didn't have the votes for it, etc. Dr. King kept putting people in the streets in harm's way to put the pressure on so that
okay.
the bill would be introduced. That's what
Jeffrey,
finally
you do
worked.
Understand
so
that you do understand that Dr. King was marching for civil rights because people that looked like me were being beaten. Dogs were being sicked on them. Basic human rights were being withheld from these people merely because of the color of their skin. So let's not equate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a humanitarian, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, to the vagina grabbing President Donald Trump.
Simone.
Jeffrey, you did introduce this. You went there.
Okay, that was incredible. I can't believe he really said that. His argument, for those of you who didn't follow, and you can be forgiven for not following it because it's mental, he said, his point is, I mean, Donald Trump is the Martin Luther King of healthcare because, think about it, Martin Luther King was fighting for civil rights even when they were massively unpopular. So here Donald Trump is fighting for his health care bill, even though it's massively unpopular. So MLK fought, Donald Trump is fighting now. Seems similar enough to me. I mean, that's like, okay, you want to play this game? Let's play this game. Hitler enjoyed ham sandwiches. I heard Donald Trump enjoys the occasional ham sandwich. Sounds similar enough to me. That's just a stupid argument. It's like, okay, they're fighting. What are they fighting for, Jeffrey? MLK was fighting for equality for everybody, justice. Donald Trump is fighting for a healthcare proposal that kicks millions of people off their insurance. That's literal. That's not me speaking. That's the nonpartisan CBO speaking. Remember, we covered the facts of Trump Care. $880 billion cut to Medicaid. So many people will die as a result of that because you're taking away the Medicaid expansion. There's already 17,000 people that die because there are some Republican governors who didn't accept the Medicaid expansion. That number would go up. Yes, Trump's healthcare idea would lead to more deaths. You have a $600 billion tax cut to the super rich. That's also part of the bill. 52, 53 million people would be uninsured. It goes from 10% to 19%, the uninsured rate. This is like a joke of a bill. It's just an absolute sledgehammer to the heart of the American healthcare system, which is already terrible. And he's comparing Donald Trump to MLK. By the way, what's even more hilarious is, like I said, he's saying he fought, he fights, huh? They fight, they're like the same thing. Again, well, what are they fighting for? Well, what did MLK have to say about this exact issue, healthcare? He said inequality in healthcare is the worst form of it. This is a guy who was in favor of a single-payer system. This is a guy who also, by the way, called the U.S. government the worst purveyor of violence in the world today. This is a guy who was killed when he was fighting for workers' rights. He was fighting for economic justice. He was protesting with unions to get, you know, better wages and better working standards, higher quality of life for average people. Donald Trump stands in stark opposition to all of that. But he fought. What are we going to do? I mean, it is what it is. So what? They're like the same thing. I mean, they both believe in fighting. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but MLK known to rip a fart every now and then. Donald Trump, I mean, he's a gassy dude. What do you want me to say? I mean, similar enough. But he's like that. They're totally the same. That's what it is. I don't know. Like, okay, CNN can have on whoever the fuck they want to have on. But let's be crystal clear. This guy's an idiot, and he's dumbing down the conversation. And he's part and parcel of the problem with false equivalence, fake neutrality. This idea of everything is debatable. Let's have on both sides. Here's a guy who says evolution is true. Here's a guy who says creationism is true. Who are we to say? You decide. Aren't we so neutral? Hey, climate change. Is it happening? Is it not happening? Here's Bill Nye talking about it. He's a science guy. And here's Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, who's taken tremendous amounts of money from the oil and gas industry. Who you decide who is right? We don't know. We are CNN. Aren't we so neutral? Yeah, but there's a difference between being neutral, which is the bullshit you're doing right now, and being objective. Objective means telling the truth no matter what. Neutral means always calling it 50-50. Well, guess what? What happens when the answer is not 50-50? What happens when, you know, there's a right and a wrong? You want to have somebody on to debate Trump's first military raid when it killed 30 civilians, including an 8-year-old American girl? Who was right? Here's the person who says it was bad to kill an 8-year-old American girl. Here's a person who says it was good. Your neutrality approach is garbage. Garbage. And this is another example of it. All right, next. Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders publicly said he doesn't think Trump is going to win re-election. So here's his exact quote. I do not believe that if Trump continues these policies that he's going to be re-elected, nor do I think that the Republicans are going to do well in 2018. The momentum right now is with the progressive movement in this country, and I think the Republicans are on the defensive and will be on the defensive increasingly. Okay, so you guys have to remember, when it came to the general election, I was like one of the last people on earth who was saying, no, seriously, this is still a race. Because, I mean, how early on did Nate Silver call it? He never gave Donald Trump a chance. That goes for the primary and that goes for the general. How early on did all the establishment media people say, I mean, this one's going to sink him here, man. I don't know what you guys are talking about. Remember, he said John McCain is a hero only because he got captured. I like people who weren't captured, he said. That's it. He's sunk. Virtually every single scandal, I said, no, you think it's the end of him. This is not the end of him, because what you're taking as like a prime example of a scandal that would sink him is not, it's not really anything that's policy focused. So people in the country are going to be like, yeah, okay, whatever. It may have been a dick thing to say, but whatever. Or at least he's speaking his mind. I mean, these are the kinds of things people will say. So I held out all the way to the end. When I said, look, I think Hillary's the favorite because all the polls showed that, but can Trump win? Of course he could win. And every step of the way, everybody was wrong about him. Say, oh, no, he's never going to win a debate. He won the first debate. Oh, well, I mean, come on. He's never going to win the next one. He won the next one. He's never going to win a primary. He won a primary. He's never going to win multiple ones. He won multiple ones. He's never going to be the nominee. He was the nominee. He's never going to win the general election. He won the general election. So everybody was wrong every step of the way. So I have, like, I'm extra sensitive, and my spidey senses go up when somebody says, no, he's done. Like, because he's been perpetually underestimated every step of the way. So I always feel like you got to err on the side of caution. However, having said all that, what's my take on it at this moment? Yeah, at this moment, it is much more likely he does not win re-election. And that's to say nothing about the disarray the Democrats are in, and they still are in disarray. There's a civil war that's raging within the Democratic Party between the corporate establishment wing and the Justice Democrats wing. And we're fighting that battle. We're trying to win that battle. We have all the momentum. We have the people on our side. You're on our side. But they have the money, and they still have the institutional power, and so we're still the underdog. Now, we're fighting, and we're going to try to win that. But, yes, Trump's actions have been so disgusting and so bad that you even have, like, some of his top supporters saying, I'm done with him. Ann Coulter, who wrote a book called In Trump We Trust, is now done with him. Aunt Mike Cernovich was against his Syria move. Paul Joseph Watson was against his Syria move. So, look, you have a guy who has no core philosophy. He has no guiding principles. He doesn't. He doesn't have any real solid thoughts on anything. He's just kind of this amorphous blob floating and just going wherever, I don't know, did a lobbyist from Big Pharma tell me something now? Okay, I flip on negotiating Medicare prices. Oh, I was said anti-interventionist stuff, but oh, are the neocons in my ear now? Okay, I'm going to listen to the neocons. He's just a dunderhead who, like the person who last spoke to him, who massaged his ego properly, they're the ones who get what they want. For a while, that was Bannon. Hey, for whatever reason, Bannon pushed the wrong buttons behind the scenes. He's done with Bannon. Now it's okay, let's go full-scale neocon here. Let's increase in Afghanistan, increase in Iraq, increase in Syria, attack the Syrian government, drop a fucking near-nuclear weapon in Afghanistan. Fucking mental. Who does that? And let's also go to the brink of war with North Korea. So when you don't have an anchoring philosophy, like my theory during the election was the contradictions don't matter. Because what happens is his supporters will read into what he said whatever they want him to have said. So they'll write off the thing that he said that they disagree with, and they'll insist, no, the thing that Trump really believes is the thing that I agree with. But here's the problem with that. That works during the primary when you're dealing with, you know, your followers who might not be that bright, and they want to see you in a good light, and they want to deify you, so they'll look at you in the best way. But then when you actually become president, what the fuck are you going to do? You can't do the contradictory things on everything, so what are you going to do? Well, you know, you're just an amorphous and you have no principles, and now it's showing. So now all the shit he said about half the time he said this during the campaign, oh, why are we doing these stupid wars? Why are we nation building? Let's spend that money here at home. Well, guess what? Like I just told you, he increased all over the place. He dropped a near nuclear weapon on Afghanistan. For what? For what? There's 800 ISIS guys in Afghanistan, they're fighting the Taliban. What the fuck are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? $314 million, gone. On the brink of war with North Korea. I mean, these are things that, you know, people in the Rust Belt who voted for Trump after they voted for Obama twice, people who just want to keep their fucking jobs, now they're like, yeah, totally, this is great, I love war with North Korea. What the fuck? No! No! And then the million other ways he's shooting people in the foot, whether it's the deregulation madness, allowing coal companies to pollute the waterways, people are going to get sick as a result of that stuff. The failed attempt at repealing Obamacare, which he should be happy it failed, because if that thing passed, it would have been healthcare apocalypse. Our healthcare system's already bad. If his monstrosity passed, oh my goodness. Appointing Goldman Sachs to the administration? I mean, when your rhetoric on the campaign trail was, I hate Goldman, and I hate Wall Street, and now you're like, anyway, I want them to run everything. I mean, these are things that, even with the media sucking, mainstream media is a joke in the United States of America, and even with the corporate Democrats still being the predominant Democrats, he's so bad, and he's gone back on so many things that people are going to go, Now, the only variable is what he does from here on out, and how well he bullshits in the next election. And obviously, if the Democrats run, like if the Democrats run like Tim Kaine, he'll probably win. Trump will probably win, not Tim Kaine. Trump will probably get two terms. But if you get somebody who's even like a C, you can grade him a C on the corporate Democrat versus justice Democrat scale. Like you sprinkled in a few progressive policies, but everybody still kind of knows still a little bit of a sellout. That person will beat Donald Trump. So I think Bernie's right. If the election were today, he would lose. Right now, he has a 35% approval rating. You know who else has a 35% approval rating? Hillary Clinton. You know what Bernie has? 61%. I mean, you know, they should do public policy polling should do one of those tests, run one of those interesting polls they do where they're like, what's more popular, cockroaches or the president? What's more popular, syphilis or the president? A root canal or the president? Like, they do these all the time. They should probably do one now because, woof, his numbers are plummeting by the day and for good reason. So he does need to look out for 2020. But then again, who even knows if he wants to get reelected, and who knows if he'll make it that far? And when I say that, I don't mean what other people mean. Like, they mean impeachment. Oh, he'll be impeached, you know, by 2020. No, I mean, like, I don't know if he'll make it that far in surviving. He's the oldest president ever elected. He's 70 years old, and he's kind of fat. And he's got the most stressful job in the world. Who the fuck knows if he'll make it that far? But I think Bernie's right. We obviously, as time goes by, this will fluctuate. Maybe there will be a time where I come out and say, no, Trump's still the favorite. But right now, that's not the case. Next. So the new CIA head, Mike Pompeo, went after WikiLeaks in a speech this week, and he's mad because they're releasing information on how the CIA is now acting like the NSA, and they can spy on people, and they do it through smart TVs, for example. We covered that story. It was a big story a few weeks back. Well, WikiLeaks heard his criticisms, and they decided to hit back. So the Hill breaks it down here. WikiLeaks hit back at CIA Director Mike Pompeo on Thursday after he criticized the website. Pompeo called WikiLeaks a non-state hostile intelligence service that had done great harm to our nation's national security. The site hit back by posting one of Pompeo's now-deleted tweets from 2016, citing the group's work publishing leaked documents from the Democratic National Committee. Quote, we need further proof that the fix was in from President Obama on down, busted 19,252 emails from DNC leaked by WikiLeaks. Pompeo had tweeted, WikiLeaks shared an image of that tweet, adding, tweet sent by CIA Director Mike Pompeo on the 24th July 2016. At an event earlier in the day at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Pompeo piled hard upon WikiLeaks, comparing the site's head, Julian Assange, to the Wizard of Oz, an unimportant man pulling levers from behind the curtain. Look at how smug they are. Like, Mike Pompeo, he's the CIA head, unimportant man, like, you know, holding the government accountable and making sure that you know what your taxpayers, what your tax dollars are doing. Yeah, but unimportant man who, like, cares about transparency in government and freedom and the Constitution. Unimportant guy who, like, has principles and values and actually sticks by them and tries to look out for the people. What a dick Pompeo is. Now, furthermore, listen to this. So here's more. This is a full quote from Pompeo. Here's what he said. WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors like Russia. By the way, still no evidence of that, and WikiLeaks swears up and down that's not true. That, no, we didn't get the DNC email leaks from Russia. Now, do I trust WikiLeaks or the CIA? Well, I don't know. WikiLeaks has never lied to me before. The CIA has lied about literally every single fucking thing that came out of their mouth. Let's continue. We have to recognize that we can no longer allow Assange and his colleagues the latitude to use free speech values against us. Wow. We can't allow them to use free speech values against us. That's kind of the point of free speech. WikiLeaks pretended that America's First Amendment freedoms shield them from justice. They may have believed that, but they are wrong. To give them the space to crush us with misappropriated secrets is a perversion of what our great Constitution stands for. It ends now. It ends now? What does that mean? You're the head of the CIA. What do you mean it ends now? What, are you going to target WikiLeaks and take them down? Is that what you're going to do? remember, the CIA has a history of torturing, overthrowing foreign governments, and putting in puppets for our corporations. And the democratically elected governments, we say, sorry, you don't serve our interests well enough. So you have the head of the CIA, who's basically threatening WikiLeaks, and literally says, Assange and his colleagues think they have the latitude to use free speech values against us. That is literally what free speech is. The CIA are assholes. That's like the core of free speech. You are able to criticize the government in a free country. Of course you are. He says the First Amendment. WikiLeaks pretended that America's First Amendment freedoms shield them from justice. No, that is justice. Justice is what they're doing by leaking all this information. Guys, everybody gets it. Are there some things that are legitimate state secrets? No shit. Okay, you're not allowed to leak the nuclear launch codes. Welcome to www.duh.com. You're not allowed to leak the position of our troops on a battlefield during a literal battle. We know. We got it. Which is why nobody's leaked that. But should they leak things that the government wrongly says, hey, this needs to be classified, this needs to be top secret? Of course. That's the trick everybody in power does now. Hey, we don't want to be embarrassed, so we're just going to take anything that's even slightly embarrassing about us and say, classified, top secret. Well, WikiLeaks says, go fuck yourself. We're going to look out for the people. Here's transparency in government. By the way, U.S. taxpayers are funding the CIA. The CIA turns around and spies on us, and they spy on us through smart TVs. The CIA is now acting like their own NSA. The last group of people in the world you want to be able to spy on you are spying on you. And now he says, oh, what, you think you have the free speech to criticize us? Yeah, bitch, of course they do. How stupid are you? This is a guy, Pompeo, who said Edward Snowden should be executed. He should be killed. Now he's the head of the CIA. Now he's threatening WikiLeaks. And where are the Democrats on this? I don't hear you. That's right. Because you're so far up your own ass with Russia. Oh, Russia, Russia, Russia. How dare they maybe, maybe not leak DNC emails that people should have seen anyway because it exposed corruption and exposed collusion to try to snub Bernie Sanders and prop up Hillary Clinton. We're so mad that, like, factual information was leaked about our shitty candidate that it's cool if this guy wants to target WikiLeaks because now we hate WikiLeaks. So now we're in favor of an authoritarian crackdown on an institution that cares about transparency in government, and we're fine with taking away free speech from people we don't like. Beyond pathetic. And now who's there to stand up for WikiLeaks? The right isn't going to stand up for him. They probably love Pompeo. The establishment obviously isn't going to stand up for WikiLeaks. They despise him more than anything. And the Democrats aren't going to stand up for him. We need principled people. So I stand with WikiLeaks, and Pompeo has some fucking nerve, man, if I don't say so myself. How dare you talk about, oh, what, you think you have the First Amendment rights, free speech rights to criticize us? Yeah. Yeah, we do. You should know that. The fact that you don't is pathetic. You should have never been approved for this position. Okay. Next. While our country is falling apart, listen to what our northern neighbors are up to. This is from Huffington Post. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau introduced legislation on Thursday that would legalize the recreational use of marijuana next year. The proposed rules would take effect in July 2018 and allow Canadians to grow up to 4 plants in their home or to purchase dried flowers and other cannabis products from licensed shops. People over 18 would be allowed to possess up to 30 grams of weed. Edible products would be allowed later, the government said in a statement. Trudeau promised voters during the 2015 election that his government would end prohibition of pot. If the changes become law, Canada would become the second country after Uruguay to completely legalize cannabis for personal use. Isn't that incredible? It's only Uruguay right now that has completely legalized cannabis for recreational reasons. So in the U.S., we have some states that did it, Colorado, Washington, but that technically doesn't count because federal law still has weed as illegal, and federal law overrides state law under our Constitution. So it's just through the good graces of the government that they have allowed the experimentation of it, and they're starting to crack down on that now with Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. So it's amazing that it's only Uruguay right now, and this is an issue that the world is like, what are we doing? Like, what are we waiting for? This is a duh issue. Now 60% of the American people say we want to legalize it. You go back to 2006, I think, it was just 35%. A tremendous switch, change. I mean, that's incredible. It nearly doubled in a short time span, because guess what? People, the reefer madness nonsense is wearing off. People know, hey, my friend smokes weed. I smoke weed. It's no fucking problem. What are you talking about? You're going to lock somebody up in a cage for using a mild substance that just tweaks your consciousness a little bit? Fuck off. Alcohol's worse than weed. So now 60% of Americans say legalize it. Well, now in Canada, as the world burns here, that would be the U.S. burning. As the U.S. burns and the world burns, Canada's like, yeah, we're just going to legalize weed. We'll be more reasonable than you guys. I mean, what did we learn here yesterday? Donald Trump dropped a near nuclear bomb, the biggest bomb we have that's not nuclear, on Afghanistan. Got like a mile blast radius in every direction. It weighs about 21,000 pounds. They had to drop it out of the back of a cargo plane because you can't use a smaller plane to drop it because it's that big. All to take out ISIS tunnels, maybe, when there's 800 ISIS fighters max in Afghanistan, and they're also currently fighting the Taliban. But we're like, fuck it, weighs 314 million, drop a near nuclear weapon. We just escalated with North Korea. We might be on the brink of war with North Korea. As Trump's doing that, they're like, yeah, let's increase freedom and liberty, justice, and be reasonable people. So some other facts about this. You can't drive within 2 hours of smoking weed. That's part of the law. And if you sell to minors, it's a 14-year prison sentence. Jeez, that's hefty. So it's, you know, more or less what they're doing is they're saying, let's legalize it, tax it, regulate it, and make it kind of like alcohol, which I file under the duh category. We should have done this a long, long time ago. Okay. Don't have much time left here, but we're going to squeeze in two more. The state of Oregon is trying to protect pot users from the federal government coming after them. So this is from ABC. They report, Oregon state lawmakers who fear heightened marijuana enforcement by federal agents overwhelmingly approved Monday a proposal to protect pot users from having their identities or cannabis buying habits from being divulged by the shops that make buying pre-rolled joints and magic brownies as easy as grabbing a bottle of whiskey from the liquor store. The bipartisan proposal would protect pot consumers by abolishing a common business practice in the Pacific Northwest state where marijuana shops often keep a digital paper trail of their recreational pot customers' names, birth dates, addresses, and other personal information. The data is gleaned from the driver's licenses, passports, or whatever other form of ID they present at the door to prove they're at least 21 as required by law. So basically what they're saying is we don't trust the Trump government. We don't trust Attorney General Jeff Sessions. We think it's a liability to our customers that we have their personal information here. Now, previously, they weren't using the personal information to nefarious ends. They were using it for, you know, reasonable causes that the people would be fine with. But now they say, oof, this is going to be an issue if they decide to come after us. So they're basically giving up all the personal data of their customers. Now, look at the stark contrast between this and what we just learned about the internet bill, how the Republicans just destroyed your online privacy and are now allowing the selling of your data to third parties so internet service providers can get rich by selling your personal information. Even though you don't approve of it to be sold to third parties, they're just going to sell it to third parties. So look at how unethical they're acting, the ISPs, versus the marijuana companies are like, we're going to look out for our people here, so let's go ahead and do this. And it's actually the lawmakers that are the ones who are leading this charge here. So this is good news coming out of Oregon that they're trying to protect recreational marijuana users. But yet again, I have to add this disgusting, sad caveat here, which is that federal law overrides state law. And what that means is, even though you're trying to protect them, and even though it might help in some cases, they're still subject to prosecution if they get caught. And that's a problem that can only be fixed at the federal level. That's the only way to fix it, is to change the federal laws, say marijuana is not a Schedule I substance anymore, which is crazy because that means it doesn't have recreational or medical uses. You got to take it off Schedule I, and really what you should do is legalize, tax, and regulate it at a federal level, like our neighbors, our northern neighbors in Canada are trying to do right now. But don't hold your breath for that under the Trump administration. But what we should do, all activists, the people, we should all get involved. We should all keep pushing this issue because 60% of the American people are already with us. So that means it's a matter of time until we have a government that needs to be responsive to the pressure if we keep applying the pressure. And maybe, just maybe, one day we'll end this national nightmare, have legal marijuana, end prohibition, and also free all the nonviolent drug offenders. That's another no-brainer. Okay, final story of the day, y'all. Officials in Kentucky decided to do the very important work of turning their state into a theocracy this week. This is from David Edwards of Raw Story. He says, the Kentucky State Senate and House this week approved resolutions that require all dated documents to include the words, in the year of our Lord. According to the Lexington Herald Leader, both chambers quietly passed the resolutions on the final day of the year's legislative session. Republican State Senator Albert Robinson, sponsor of the measure, said that he was trying anywhere and everywhere I can to respect our Creator. It's important for us to go back to the basics of our U.S. and state constitutions that use that phrase, he said. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin, who has officially declared 2017 the year of the Bible, also dates all of his proclamations with, in the year of our Lord. Let me do a little thought experiment here with you. Take out all the references to Christianity in the Bible and replace it with references to Islam and the Quran. Imagine every single document said, in the year of Allah. I wonder how the good folks in Kentucky would react to that. All of a sudden, they would become rigid, strident, ardent secularists. So we got to separate religion and state. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I mean, look, your religion is your personal business, whatever, but we got to separate the state and religion. I mean, come on, we got to be reasonable here, right? The second they get the opportunity, oh, yeah, let's shove our religion down their throats. They can't shove their religion down our throats. We can shove our religion down their throats. I got to stop saying throats and shoving things down it. Visual, not too great. I'm so happy the officials in Kentucky, the Republicans, are focusing on serious issues. I mean, it's not like their state has problems. You know, do you guys have poverty? Has poverty been abolished in Kentucky? Does everybody have health care in Kentucky? What's the average or median income? How's it going over there? You don't have other problems? How's the state budget coming along? No, just quietly, hey, whatever. It's what we do. It's a random Tuesday or something. Let's include in the year of our Lord in every bill. Oh, totally. That's such a great idea. It's so important that we do something like that. 2017, the year of the Bible, what does that even mean? And for people who are religious, does that mean 2016 wasn't the year of the Bible? 2003 wasn't the year of the Bible? They're so goofy. They're so goofy. You got to separate your religion from government. Government is supposed to be about democratic issues to help the people. How do we structure our society and organize it? The fact that you're injecting your personal metaphysical beliefs into the government, I mean, that's crazy. Then what stops somebody from going in there and saying, I believe in Jigglypuff in space. That's my version of religion. I think there's a Jigglypuff in space, and it gives up life. So So we will now put at the end of every single serious piece of legislation about a serious issue, all hail Jigglypuff in space. Everybody would say that is utterly ridiculous, right? But why is it all of a sudden better when it comes to a couple thousand-year-old religion about a hippie zombie Jew who walked on water? Why is that any less ridiculous? But our religion is right. That does, what does that mean? So what's the evidence? What's the proof? There is no proof. You know that. It's your beliefs. You can have your beliefs, but that doesn't mean you it's by definition correct. And what? There's over 4,000 religions in existence right now. But all the other ones are wrong, but we had it right. I'm so lucky. I'm so special that I was raised in a household that just happened to have the right religion when over 4,000 religions exist right now. Historically, there's been way more than that, and there's billions of people on the planet. Everybody else is wrong, I'm right. Well, you precious little snowflake. Or maybe you're full of shit, and maybe you have no idea if you're right, and therefore we should keep it out of the government. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. Come back Monday. You know the deal. Everybody enjoy your weekend. Peace. Mwah.